Okay, bismillah wa salat wa salam ala rasulillah wa ala ali wa man wala wa ba'd. Today, this is our 64th session in level 3 fiqh. Arabic lessons in fiqh, level 3, Islamic University of Medina, Arabic Language Institute. And today we're supposed to complete what was remaining, because of lack of time last week, of the Arkan of Hajj, the essential pillars of pilgrimage that we talked about in the previous session. We didn't take the comments from Al-Mulakhis Al-Fiqhi by Sheikh Salih Faldan, Hafizahullah, on pages 298 to 300. So I want to just kind of quickly go through what he mentioned there, some important points that he mentioned, and then we go to our new topic, which is Mahdhurat Al-Ihram, the things which are prohibited while in the state of Ihram, in our textbook on page 81 to 84, and some other references that we may look at. This is a long topic, and there's a lot of notes in all of our secondary references. We're not going to read all of them. But in any case, we're going to do something with that topic after we complete what remains from the Ahkam of Hajj, the essential pillars of Hajj, from Mulakhis Al-Fiqhi by Sheikh Salih Al-Fawzan, Hafidhullah, page 298 to 300. So I'm going to read a little bit of the notes that he said here, and I'm going to skip some of it for the sake of time so we can get to our new topic. The Shaykh, he begins, may Allah protect and preserve him, on page 298, top of the page, it says, Bab fi al-dafa' ila Muzdalifa, wal-mabit fiha, wal-dafa' min Muzdalifa ila Mina wa amal yawm al-eid. Okay, so this is a long topic, I'm not going to read all of it, but the topic is what? The going forward to Muzdalifa, going to Muzdalifa. Yani meaning from where to Muzdalifa? From Arafah to Muzdalifa. From Arafah to Muzdalifa. Going to Muzdalifa and Al-Mabit Fiha. Spending the night in Muzdalifa. Remember last week we talked about the difference of opinion. Yani the majority of scholars said that spending the night in Muzdalifa is what?
Wajib.
Min wajibat al-hajj. Some scholars said, no, it's a rukun. It's a rukun. Okay? So we had that discussion last week. And Sheikh Salih Fawzan is with the group, the majority of the scholars who say that it's a wajib from the wajibat of Hajj, not a rukun. And we know that there's some strength to the opinion of those who say it's a rukun, even if they're a minority, but they have some proof that they brought that we discussed last week. By the way, what are the arkan of Hajj? What are the arkan of Hajj? Number one, al-ihram. Number two, the ihram is the niyyah. The wukuf al-arafah. Tawaf al-Ifada, and Sa'i Baina Safa wal-Marwa. Those are four, and some scholars, minority, said Mabit Muzdalifa. Sheikh Salih Fawzan says, yani under this chapter, after the sun sets, yani on the day of Arafah, the pilgrims will go to, from Arafah to Muzdalifa, bi sakina wa waqar, yani calmly, calm, in a calm manner. And then he goes on to say, I'm skipping, I'm just like trying to give you the context of the statement that we want to reach. He says, and halfway down the page, وَيَكُونَ الْحَجِّ حَالْ دَفْعِهِ مِنْ عَرَفَ إِلَى مُزْدَلِفَ مُسْتَغْفِرًا. This is an important point. And the Shaykh is saying the pilgrim, his condition when he's going forth from Arafah to Muzdalifa, he should be engaged in istighfar. Should be engaged in istighfar. And who's thinking about that? People thinking about, we just gone, we're tired, we've been standing on Arafat, sitting on Arafat, supplicating all day and night, and we're going to Muzdalifa to sleep out in the dirt. They're not thinking about this, right? But this is part of the rites of Hajj. Sheikh is saying, the person, their condition should be, when they go from Arafat to Muzdalifa, istighfar, seeking Allah's forgiveness. Now, and he says this based on what? The saying of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Al-Baqarah, second surah, 199th ayah, the saying of Allah, ثُمَّ أَفِيدُوا مِنْ حَيْثُ أَفَادَ النَّاسِ وَاسْتَغْفِرُوا اللَّهِ إِنَّ اللَّهَ غَفُرُ رَحِيمٌ. And then they go forward, yani going from Arafah, yani in the same way that all the people go from Arafah to Muzdalifah, and they are seeking forgiveness of Allah. Indeed, Allah is forgiving, merciful. And then he talks about the name of Muzdalifah. It is called Muzdalifah, and that's because, yani it is from Al-Izdilaf. Izdilaf. وَهُوَ Al-Qurb. Yani Izdilaf means Al-Qurb, nearness. And that's because the pilgrims, when they go forth from Arafat, yani they're going near to a place near, that is, they're going forth to Muzdalifa, which is close to يعني عرفات. And it is also named, besides مزدلفة, this place is also named جمع. And that is because of اجتماع الناس بها, because the people all gather together in that place. So مزدلفة is also known as جمع. وتسمى المشعر الحرام, and it is also called the sacred monument. And that is because of the, يعني the place there, that there is a place there that the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم said a person should stand and supplicate and remember Allah. Okay, after this he says, near the bottom of the page 298, فإذا وصل إلى المزدلفة. What the person does when he arrives in مزدلفة, صلى بها المغرب والعشاء جمعا ما قصر العشاء ركعتين بأذان واحد وإقامتين. And when a person arrives in مزدلفة, they should pray Maghrib and Isha, combining them, while shortening the Isha to two rak'ah. No shortening Maghrib, right? Bi adhan wahid wa iqamatain. With one adhan and two iqamas. Yani when a person arrives in Muzdalifah, they're going to call the adhan for Maghrib, iqama and pray Maghrib, and then another iqama and pray Isha. One adhan, iqama for each prayer. It's clear? No. Huh? The people will pray in Jama'ah, not one Jama'ah. Yani every group, every family, every bus, every whatever, yani they're going to pray with their own people. When they land there, drop their bags, and they're going to pray Maghrib and Isha, if that is possible. Yani with one adhan and two iqamah. And each of the prayers should have an iqamah. then after this, the Shaykh says, and I'm turning to page 299. Again, I'm not going to read everything, but ثُمَّ يَبِيتُ بِالْمُزْدَلِفَ حَتَّى يَصْبَعْ وَيُصَلِّ. Then the person should remain spending the night in Muzdalifah after praying Maghrib and Isha. They should spend the night in Muzdalifah until they reach the morning. And then they should pray the Fajr prayer. And it's narrated in the Sunnah that the Prophet ﷺ didn't pray any other prayers before or after the prayer that he prayed, yani joining Maghrib and Isha and Muzdalifah. He didn't pray any other prayer before or after. Rather, he slept the whole night until Fajr, at the break of dawn, at the beginning of the break of dawn, then he prayed the Fajr prayer early, as soon as it came in. The Shaykh says, وَالسُنَّةَ أَنْ يَبِيتُ بِالْمُزْدَلِفَةِ إِلَىٰ أَنْ يَطْلَعَ الْفَجْرِ. Yani the Sunnah is that a person spends the whole night in Muzdalifah until the break of dawn. And then he should pray the Fajr prayer في أول وقت, in the beginning of his time. ثُمَّ يَقِفْ بِهَا وَيَدُوْ إِلَىٰ أَنْ يَصْفَرْ ثُمَّ يَدْفَعْ إِلَىٰ مِنَ قَبْلَ تُلُوِ الشَّمْسِ. Yani the person should pray the Fajr as soon as it came in, and then he should stand on Muzdalifah, and he should supplicate to Allah until the day becomes bright, until the sky becomes bright. And then he should leave from Muzdalifah and going to Mina before the rising of the sun. Is it clear? Yani, after Fajr prayer, as soon as the Fajr came in, the Prophet prayed Fajr, and then he stood supplicating until the sky became bright, but before the rise of the sun. Before sunrise, you have to leave from Muzdalifah. Before sunrise. Now,
yes, so in that case, the person doesn't do the
Adhkar or Salah. You can do it. But the point is that a person should be engaged from that time until just before sunrise in dhikr of Allah. Adhkar or Salah is. No, I mean, the point is the Prophet ﷺ supplicated, glorified, praised Allah, he engaged in dhikr. Yani, dhikr and dua. Dhikr and dua.
He actually stood up, or he was just
sitting. Yeah, and you can sit. It's not prohibited to sit. If a person is able to stand, then this is yani better. If a person can stand, but of course they might not be able to stand for an hour. Just like a person standing in Arafat is part of the ritual of Arafat, but it doesn't mean you're required to stand the whole time. If a person can't stand, they can sit. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam sat on his camel. He raised his hands. Naam. That's from the sunnah. In supplication. In the sunnah, the general rule is that a person should raise the hand when they're supplicating. That's from the sunnah. That is legislated. And it's one of the means through which a person's supplication is answered, that they raise their hands. However, there are some places in the sunnah where the Prophet ﷺ clearly did not raise his hands. The sunnah there is not to raise the hands. Yani the sunnah is to do what he did and to leave what he left. Okay, so in the dua of Jumu'ah prayer, yeah, the Prophet ﷺ supplicated in the Jumu'ah, but he didn't raise his hands. Mm. Only the sunnah is to raise the finger. Okay, after the congregational prayers, the Prophet ﷺ supplicated. But he didn't raise his hands. He did not raise his hands. So the general rule in supplication, you should raise your hands. But there are some places in which the sunnah is not to raise the hands. Now,
which level is the hand you raise?
Yani Shaykh Uthaymeen said that a person should raise their hands, yani generally, hands together, generally raise up, like to the level of their shoulders. But there are some occasions in which it's permissible and it's legislated to raise the hands high, and that is a special kind of supplication. But the normal supplication, Shaykh Uthaymeen said, yani that the hands should be together and they should be raised like up to the level of the shoulders. Now, we're not going to finish this if we get a lot of questions. And if something is not clear, it's okay, but it's not clear what we're saying. Now,
night prayer too, is there any proof to raise your hand when you get up
from the door? In the night? Yeah. Yani in the prayer itself? Before the salah?
That's the issue. Remember the class you were saying, when he gets up, he says the ayahs
for Ali. Yani if a person supplicates any time, day or night, it's from the sunnah to raise your hands. That's legislated from the sunnah. Raising the hands is from the means of a dua being accepted. Unless it's on an occasion which is clearly narrated in the sunnah that the Prophet supplicated without raising his hands. Otherwise, the general rule is to raise the hands. Now, in the night, in the day, any time. Person wakes up at night, they can raise their hands and supplicate. Now, for supplication, now, supplicating, a person should raise their hands. It's not mandatory, but it's from the hadith of the man who was traveling, disheveled, and so on. And from the things that's mentioned in the hadith, the scholar said, is that he raised his hands. And he said, Ya Rabbi. And so on. And these are the things that help for a person's supplication to be accepted. That they raise their hands, that they say, Ya Rabbi, they use the word Rabb. Because most of the prophets in the Quran, when they supplicated with the name of Allah, Rabb. But a person can supplicate with other names, right? And if a person didn't raise their hands, there's no sin. That is from the things that is legislated, unless there's a proof that the prophet supplicated without raising his hand. The Shaykh says, Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. The Shaykh says, فَإِنْ كَانَ مِنَ الضَّعَفَ يعني if, now here is the Shaykh is talking about what we're talking about from last week, spending the night in Muzdalifah. If a person is from those who are weak, like women and children, and those who are like them, فَإِنَّهُ يَجُوزْ لَهُ أَنْ يَتَعَجَّلْ فِي دَفَعْ مِنْ مُزْدَلِفَ الْأَمِنَ إِذَا غَابَ الْقَمَرِ. This is a point that the Shaykh mentions here. That's a fine point that most of the books are not mentioning. That if a person is weak, like the women and children, then it's permissible for them to hasten, to go ahead in leaving from Muzdalifah to Mina, إِذَا غَابَ الْقَمَرِ. Yani, if the sun has set, the moon has set. The moon, the setting of the moon is not the same as Muntasif al-Layl. Most of the books say, person, yani those who are allowed to leave may leave after half of the night. The sunnah indicates that those who are allowed to leave may leave after the moon has set, which is closer to Fajr time. In any case, the point is that people are required to stay in Muzdalifah. That's a wajib from wajibat. There are some people who are exempted from it. Those people have to stay at least until the moon sets. Most of the scholars make it general until half of the night. Meaning some people, they came into Muzdalifah and then they left. They prayed, Maghrib and Isha, and they kept on going. They said, we women, we weak, whatever, we're out of here. No, that's after the moon has set. After the moon has set. Yani close to the time of Fajr. And likewise, it's also permissible for the one who is responsible for the affairs of the weak, even if they're not from the weak themselves. If they are responsible to take care of somebody, and that person can't make it without them, then they are permissible to accompany them to attend to their affair. And then the Shaykh says here, وَيَنْصَرِفْ مَعْهُمْ بَعْدَ مُنْتَصِفِ اللَّيْلِ. This is the general, the expression that's used, leaving Muzdalifah, بَعْدَ مُنْتَصِفِ اللَّيْلِ. But just before that, the Shaykh said, إِذَا غَابَ الْقَمَرِ. And we should like make a distinction between these two expressions. It's close to Fajr now. The point is, right, Muzdalifah is how far from Mina? Yani it's 2 or 3 miles. It takes a few minutes to go there, depending on the crowds, right? The point of the weak people leaving before Fajr is that before the crowds leave, they get to leave early and get to Mina before it gets crowded. That's the point. They get a head start on everybody else. So before 10 million people are leaving, yani from Muzdalifah, the weak people get to leave, yani half an hour, 45 minutes, 1 hour earlier, and they get there before it gets, yani the roads get crowded. That's the point. Okay, they get there, and they get to get ahead of everybody else. But there's some more detail to this matter that requires some discussion that are not normally mentioned, but today is not the time for that. Yani whoever reads Sheikh Al-Albani's book on Hajj, Manasik al-Hajj wal-Umrah, then they'll get a lot of more details concerning this. As far as the strong people, then it's not ليس ماهم ضعفا, they don't have any weak people with them. فَإِنَّهُ يَنْبَغِي لَهُمْ أَنْ لَا يَخْرُجُوا مِنْ مُزْدَلِفَ حَتَّى يَطْلَعَ الْفَجْرِ. So as far as the regular people, then it is incumbent upon them that they do not leave from Muzdalifah until the break of dawn. So when the dawn breaks, they should pray the Fajr in Muzdalifah. And then they should stand in Muzdalifah until the sky is bright, until just before, yani, sunrise. Here the Shaykh says, and this is the shahid in this whole discussion, فَالْمَبِيتْ بِي مُزْدَلِفَةً وَاجِبٌ مِّنْ وَاجِبَاتِ الْحَجِ. Shaykh Salih al-Fawzan, his opinion is that spending the night in Muzdalifah is a wajib, obligatory duty from the obligatory duties of Hajj. لَا يَجُوزْ تَرْقُهُ. It's not permissible for a person to abandon this particular rite of Hajj. And then he goes into some other details. And then at the end of the page, 299, last paragraph, he says, وَيَجُوزُ لِأَهْلِ الْأَعْذَارِ تَرْكَ الْمَبِيتِ مُزْدَلِفَةً, that the people who أَعْذَارِ, who have a udhr, shari'i, then it's permissible for those people who have a udhr, shari'i, a legal excuse, permissible for them to abandon the spending of the night in Muzdalifah, meaning they can leave. Who are these people? The sick person who يَحْتَجْ إِلَى تَمْرِيدِهِ فِي الْمُسْتَشْفَى. A person is sick, he needs to go to the hospital. He doesn't have to spend the night, and maybe he'll die there. Rather, it's okay, that person may be taken to the hospital. There's no sin against them. Okay, so there's some people who might have a legitimate excuse, and the Shaykh says also, yani, the one that who, the sick person needs somebody to attend to them, the ambulance attendant or the people who attend to the sick, who have to take them to the hospital, they're also allowed to leave with them. And this is like the people who water the pilgrimage and who take care of the animals, the ru'at. Yani, the Prophet ﷺ gave them special permission to leave from, yani, to abandon the spending the night in Muzdalifah, and as well to abandon the spending the night at Mina. Okay, the last thing that the Shaykh says concerning this is on page 300, top of the page, فَالْحَاصُلْ أَنَّ الْمَبِيتْ بِمُزْدَلِفَةً وَاجِبٌ مِّنْ وَاجِبَاتِ الْحَاجِ. So the summary of the affair is what? That spending the night in Muzdalifah is an obligatory duty from the obligatory duties of Hajj. Okay, so that's what we wanted to read to end this topic of Ahkam al-Hajj, yani those statements from Sheikh Salih al-Fawzan. After this, in the time that remains, we want to look at the next topic, which is the Mahdurat, yani those things which are prohibited while in the state of Ihram. This is on page 81 to 84 of our textbook. Page 81 to 84 is quite lengthy. And we'll have some other references for some of the other books. Primarily, probably going to read from Sheikh Salih al-Fawzan's explanation concerning this particular matter in Fiqh al-Ibadat. We might look at al-Wajiz or some other matters. Sheikh Salih al-Fawzan's explanation also quite lengthy, though. They're all very, very lengthy. For that reason, yani, we'll try to just select maybe one of them and maybe make some notes from some of the others. If anybody looks through the secondary sources and finds anything related to the mahdurat of Hajj, of Ihram, that's noteworthy, that's very, very important, please bring it to our attention in case I missed it. Because we're not going to read all the secondary sources. Yani, I'm going to look through them, I'm going to read through them and try to find anything that, yani, needs to be mentioned, that's not mentioned in the ones that we're going to read from, or any difference of opinion or stuff like that. I'm going to try to find it. If you find something, also, don't, yani, hesitate to bring it to our attention. Okay, we're on page 81, Arabic Lessons in Fiqh, Level 3, Islamic University of Medina. At the bottom of the page it says محظورات الإحرام وحكم من ارتكب شيئا منها. The محظورات of إحرام. What do we mean by محظورات of إحرام? يعني the things that are prohibited. محظور يعني it's prohibited for a person to engage in these things while they're in the state of Ihram. And what is the ruling of the one who, yani, falls into one of these prohibited things? Any one of them, while they're in Ihram. What is the ruling concerning that? So these are two topics. What are the mahrurat? And along with that, the evidences for each of them. And then the second topic will be, yani, what is the ruling concerning the person who commits any one of these prohibited acts while in Ihram? Okay. On page 81, under that title, we have Mahdhurat al-Ihram, Tisa'atun. The Mahdhurat of Ihram are Tisa'a. The first note I'm going to make is that some scholars said, Yani 10, 11, 12, 13, it's not agreed upon that they are 9. Tisa'a. 9 are mentioned here. Wahiyah. Okay, first we're going to list them, and then we're going to discuss each of them in detail. That's how they formatted it. First they just give the list of the 9 mahdhurat, and then after that they discuss each one of them separately with whatever evidences that they have for it, any discussion that goes with it. Okay, so the 9 mahdhurat, these things must be known. Most of the people, I dare to say, most of the people, if not most, certainly a large number of people who perform Hajj don't know what are the mahdhurat of Hajj, of Ihram. Most of the people don't know. That's a fact. I've been to Hajj several times, and you find people after Hajj saying, oh, somebody told me this, somebody told me that, I didn't know about this, I didn't know about that. They didn't know. And they went to Hajj and they didn't prepare for it. Mahdhurat al-Ihram, tisa'a. Wahiya izalatu sha'r biqassin aw halqin aw qata'in aw natfin. Izalatu sha'r, yani the removal of hair. That's from the mahdhurat of ihram. It's prohibited to remove hair. بِقَصٍ, by clipping it, أو حَلْقٍ, or shaving it, أو قَطْعٍ, or cutting it, or نَطْفٍ, plucking it. Yani removing the hair by any means, it's prohibited. Whether you shave it, cut it, pluck it, doesn't matter. You can't do it. Don't remove the hair. And if it falls out by itself, there's no harm. The second one, تَقْلِيم الأظفار. تقليم الأظفار, meaning cutting the nails, cutting or clipping one's nails, fingernails, toenails, prohibited while a person is in a state of ihram. So one of the things that we should know is that these things should be done before the person enters ihram. They should clip their nails, shave their pubic hairs, stuff like this. Everything that needs to be done that's from the sunan, they should do it before entering state of ihram, because in ihram you can't do any of that. Okay, so these things that a person might want to do, I want to clip my nails, I want to trim my mustache, I want to do, no, you can't do that. Not once you're in ihram. It's finished. Alright? Clipping the nails. Number 3, we're on page 82, top of the page, third thing from the mahdhurat al-ihram. Taghtiyat al-ra's. Lil-rijali dun al-nisa. Yani, number 3 is what? Covering the head. And this is for men, to the exclusion of women. Dun al-nisa. This is for men. This is applicable to men. They cannot wear kufi, they cannot wear imama, they cannot wear anything on their head while they're in the state of ihram. Cannot wear headgear. That's for men to the exclusion of women. Women obviously must cover their hair. Number 4, lubs al-makhit. Lirrijali dun al-nisa. Lubs al-makhit means what?
Wearing
sewn clothing. Clothing that's made to fit the body. Clothing like pants, legs, sleeves of the shirt, hood over the head. Yani clothing that's made to fit the members of the body. It doesn't mean what it appears to be, makhit, anything that has stitches, that's sewn. No, it doesn't mean that. And we'll discuss that in detail later on. But the point is here, just to make note, al-makhit, it appears as though it means anything that has yani sewn. But it doesn't mean that. If we look at the hadith, as we'll see in our discussion later, we'll see that what the Prophet ﷺ prohibited was wearing clothing that are made to fit the members of the body. Sleeves for the arms, legs for the pants, pants legs, hoods and things like this. Okay, we'll discuss it in detail. Now, something unclear about the wording here?
No, it seems like showing, because the members of the body have to show their
Yeah, then it's the form of it shouldn't be having a sleeve or pants leg or something like this. Now, the rida and iza can be something sewn. It can be sewn. If it got tore, you can stitch it. If a person wanted to sew a pocket onto it, you can sew it. And it can have stitches. Sewn clothing is not a right translation. And that's what we're going to come to in detail later. But here I'm just making a note that it doesn't mean what it appears to mean. That anything that is stitched or even sewn. But as he said, sewn to fit the parts of the body. That's what the meaning of it is. That's what the scholars intend by this. Sheikh Al-Uthaymeen discusses it in some detail. Point number five, mas atib. The fifth prohibition in ihram is yani using, touching your body with any type of scent, perfume, any type of perfume scent. Huh? Atib. Number six, qatlu as-sayd al-barri wastiyaduhu. As-sayd al-barri means what? Land game, land animals that are hunted. Killing any land animals. Or, yani, istiyadu means hunting them. Even if you didn't kill them, hunting them is prohibited. Rather, it's prohibited to assist somebody else in hunting them. Even to the extent of saying, it went that way. You don't have any part in it. Somebody who's not in ihram may hunt the land animal, you may not participate in it. Number seven, aqtu al-nikah aw al-khitbah. Aqt al-nikah aw al-khitbah, meaning the contracting a marriage or making a marriage proposal, khitbah. Contracting the marriage, yani meaning you go to her father and say, I want to marry your daughter, and he marries her to you. You can't do that. Rather, you can't even make the proposal to marry her while you're in ihram. Nor can you marry somebody to somebody else, your daughter to somebody else, while you're in ihram. Not only you can't marry, you can't marry somebody to somebody else while you're in ihram. Number eight, al-jima'u. Al-jima'u, sexual intercourse. Number nine, al-mubashara. Al-mubashara, yani the things that, the touching and hugging that lead up to, yani that lead a person to engage in sexual intercourse. The things that may lead a person to that. Kissing, hugging, embracing. It's prohibited while a person is in ihram. If a man takes his wife to Hajj, then he has to, yani while you're in the state of ihram, you have to refrain from marital relations. While you're in ihram. Yani it's a short period of time, person is engaged sincerely. Yani totally immersed in worship. Now, these are the nine things that are mentioned. We'll see in some of the other readings that there are other yani things that are also mentioned. After this, these are the nine things. Okay, what are those nine things without looking at the book? What are they? Izara Tushar. Yani removing hair. Jima'a, sexual intercourse. Al-Mubashara, leading up to it. Not cutting the nails. What you said? Lafs al-makhit.
Things that lead to sexual,
Foreplay. Yani al-mubashara. Now, uncovering the head. Yani it's prohibited to cover the head. Now, scent, perfume, using scent or any fragrance. Don't get married and don't marry anybody. And don't make a proposal to marry. And what else?
Hunting.
Or killing the land animals. Killing them or hunting them. Or helping somebody.
Embracing.
The other things that lead up, touching, yani, lead up to sexual intercourse. Okay.
Clothes that cover the members.
I think he said machit. No. Okay, so these are the things that are mentioned here. After this, what follows is the discussion of some of these points. Some of them are in greater detail than others. Some of them, the details will come in our secondary sources. Okay, so the first of those things that are mentioned, فَأَمَّا حَلْقَ الشَّعْرِ. Anyone, page 82, after the ninth mahdur of the mahdurat of ihram, we're going to the details of each one. أَمَّا حَلْقَ الشَّعْرِ. Yani shaving the hair. وَمَا فِي مَعْنَاهُ. And everything that is like it. Meaning shaving the hair, cutting the hair, clipping the hair, plucking the hair, all of that. Right? وَمَا فِي مَعْنَاهُ. And whatever has the same meaning as it. فَلِقَوْلِهِ. So it is based upon, the reason why it's prohibited, لِقَوْلِ اللَّهِ تَعَالَى. Based upon the saying of Allah the Most High, وَلَا تَحْلِقُوا رُؤُوسَكُمْ حَتَّى يَبْلُغَ الْحَدْيُ مَحِلَّهُ. فَمَنْ كَانَ مِنْكُمْ مَرِيضًا أَوْ بِهِ أَذَى من رأسه ففدية من صيام أو صدقة أو نسك. سورة البقرة, second surah, 196 ayah. يعني the basis of this prohibition of clipping or cutting or shaving the hair, the saying of Allah سبحانه وتعالى in سورة البقرة, ayah 196, ولا تحلقوا رؤوسكم, do not shave your heads, meaning remove the hair, حتى يبلغ الهدي, until the sacrificial animal reaches محله, يعني the place where يعني it's permissible to slaughter it, and يعني where you يعني as a result of that be يعني getting out of the state of ihram. يعني when you get out of the state of ihram, then you can clip your hair, shave your hair, or whatever. So whoever from amongst you, Allah says, but whoever from amongst you is sick, or he has something that is harming to him, be he other, some يعني matter that is causing harm to him, his in reference to his head, يعني what's understood here is, then he may remove the hair in order to يعني deal with the sickness or whatever it is that he has in his hair, he may do so. That's understood here, right? Because what follows? فَفِدْيَةٌ. Then he has to expiate. Expiate for what? Because he cut the hair due to the need or necessity from sickness or whatever. فَفِدْيَةٌ. And that expiation, سِيَامٍ أَوْ صَدَقَةٍ أَوْ نُسُكٍ. So the fidya, it can be what?
Yeah.
Fasting, صَدَقَة, charity, or sacrifice. These are three options, inshallah, we'll talk about in a little bit more detail. But, yani, so Allah is saying what? This is the first matter that's mentioned for mahdurat, the cutting, clipping, shaving of the hair. Person can't do that until they sacrifice their animal. Yani, in which case? Yani, this is, right, on the day of, yani, 10th, nahar, day of sacrifice. Person makes the sacrifice, yani, through the stones, and they cut and shave the hair and make tawaf inside. Person now is getting out of the state of ihram. So at that point, it's okay. But if a person didn't get to that point yet, they cannot shave their head. Sheikh says here, or it says here, يعني, after mention of this ayah, فَمَنْ حَلَقَ شَعْرَهُ أَوْ نَطَفَهُ أَوْ قَصَّهُ فَعَلَيْهِ فِدْيَةٌ. So whoever shaved his hair, whoever plucked the hair, whoever clipped the hair, then this person is obligated to give the fidya. من صيام ثلاثة أيام أو إطعام ستة مساكين أو ذبح شاة. So what is the expiation? Fasting 3 days, or feeding 6 poor people, or sacrificing a small animal, sheep, one of the small type of animal. وذلك للآيات المتقدمة. And this is based on يعني the ayat that we just mentioned, previously mentioned, and also based upon the hadith of Ka'b ibn Ujra radiallahu anhu, he said, كان بي أذى من رأسي فهملت إلى النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم والكمل يتناثر على وجهي. يعني the hadith of Ka'b ibn Ujra radiallahu anhu, he said, I had something harmed in my head, يعني some insects, some bugs, some kind of something that was causing harm to me, right? Which mentioned is lice. Yani lice. He said, I had this in my head, in my hair. So I was carried to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Wal kummalu, the lice, these insects, are yatanathara. Yani they are falling off of my head, all over my face. Ala wajhi. فقال صلى الله عليه وسلم ما كنت أرى أن الجهد قد بلغ منك ما أرى الجهد. يعني the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم said, I didn't think, I didn't imagine that the pain يعني that you are suffering, the jahad that you are suffering from, had reached this extent that I see now. I didn't know your condition was like that. The Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم said, أتجد شات, يعني do you find the animal to sacrifice? قلت لا. Said, I don't have. فنزلت هذه الآية. So then this ayah, when the Prophet said, do you have an animal to sacrifice? Because you're going to have to cut your hair off. يعني you got to get out of this condition. But you're going to have to make a sacrifice. Do you have one? He said, no. Then Allah revealed this ayah. فَفِدْيَةٌ مِنْ سِيَامٍ. Then the expiation may be fasting. أَوْ صَدَقَةٍ. Or صدقة, feeding the poor. أو نسكن, or making a sacrifice, any one of them. قال صوم ثلاثة أيام يعني Yani the Prophet said to him, yani fasting for 3 days. Or feeding 6 poor people. Nisfa sa'i. Yani half of a sa'a. Half of a sa'a is what?
Two mud.
Two mud. Yani a mud being the two hands being cupped together full. Right? That's one mud, two mud. Yani feeding the 6 poor people. Each one of them with a half of a sa'a. Two mud of food. لكل مسكين. Yani half a sa'a for every poor person. Qala. Yani the narrator of the hadith, Ka'b, he said, فَنَزَلَتْ فِيَّ خَاسَةً وَهِيَ لَكُمْ عَامَةً. Yani this ayah was revealed, especially for me. It was revealed, نَزَلَتْ فِيَّ, in reference to me, خَاسَةً, especially, وَلَكُمْ, but all of you included in it, generally. Yani, it was real in reference to me, but it's applicable to anybody in this condition. Applicable to everybody in this condition. This hadith, رواه البخاري ومسلم وغيرهما واللفظ لمسلم. This hadith reported by Bukhari and Muslim and others besides them, and the exact wording that mentioned here is from Sahih Muslim. This is the first of the mahdurat al-ihram. What we should note here is that the person who has such a condition where they are required, yani they must, yani for health reasons or whatever, remove their hair. It's not like a person who did so unintentionally, forgetfully, unknowingly. This is a person who does it intentionally, but they have excuse to do it. They have to make a sacrifice, or they have to feed 6 poor people, or they have to fast for 3 days. We're getting close to the time for the... Is something that clear? We're gonna come back to this topic in detail. But here, we're just reading what's here, and then we're going to go to what Sheikh Al-Saymin said with the details of it, and maybe if we need, also what Sheikh Salih found.
So it's not 3 consecutive days.
It doesn't say 3 consecutive days. No, 3 days. Fasting 3 days, feeding 6 poor people, half of a sa'a for each poor person, or making a sacrifice. It appears as though it's, ikhtiyar. Person choose. Yani, if anybody can find yani this issue in detail, any discussions concerning this issue in detail, please try to find something concerning yani the choice between these three matters. The second matter, wa amma taklim al azfar. Yani, there's a word in between al azfar. You have the aleph from al azfar, and then you have bil basmala. That word is a printing mistake. All of that is a printing mistake. It should be وَأَمَّا تَقْلِيم الْأَذْفَار. All the rest of that word is just, I don't know where it came from. From a jinn or something. The aleph is from الْأَذْفَار. Yani, as far as clipping the nails. فَلِأَنَّهُ تَحْصُلُ بِهِ الرَّفَاهِيَّةِ كَحَلْقَ الشَّعْرِ. Yani, the second matter, they don't discuss in any detail, inshallah, we look at what the Shaykh says about it, and the other sources, but he just says here, as far as clipping the nails, fingernails or toenails, then this is because, yani, the reasoning behind it, is because, تحصل به الرفاهية, yani, comfort and ease, is achieved by it in the same way as shaving the hair. Yani, in other words, a person is comfortable when they are able to clip their nails and shave their hairs and do all of these things, right? You feel uncomfortable when you have all of this stuff undone. So they're saying that it's a qiyas. Yani, by the same reasoning that a person would like to cut and shave their hair, yani, to be comfortable, likewise, a person wants to clip their nails, this is prohibited while you're in the state of ihram. We'll talk about it in detail from the other sources. Number 3 and number 4. He brings them together. أَمَّا تَغْتِيَةَ الرَّاسِ وَلُبْسَ الْمَخِيتِ. They bring them together. Yani, covering the head and wearing the garments that are sewn to fit the parts of the body. Both of them are prohibited. Li hadith Abdullah ibn Umar. Based on the hadith of Abdullah ibn Umar radiallahu anhuma, may Allah be pleased with both of them, him and his father. Fi sahihain in Bukhari and Muslim, wa ghayrihima and other than them, wa lafdhu li muslimin. Yani, the hadith that we're going to mention is in Bukhari and Muslim, but the exact wording is from Imam Muslim. From the Sahih of Muslim. He said, يعني the narrator said, that is Abdul bin Umar رضي الله عنهما, سئل النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم ما يلبس المحرم. The Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم was asked ما يلبس المحرم, meaning what does the person in state of ihram wear? Okay, this is a specific question. What does he wear? Now, what he wears, the person in ihram, there may be many things that he wear, but there are some things that he can't wear. So the Prophet just mentioned what he can't wear, and then we make qiyas on that, and then whatever doesn't fit in that category, he can wear. Okay, how the Prophet answered this question? What can the person in the state of ihram wear? Well, he said, I'll tell you what he can't wear. قَالَ لَا يَلْبَسَ الْمُحْرِمُ الْقَمِيسَ. He doesn't wear the qamis, meaning a shirt that has sleeves to fit the body. وَلَا الْإِمَامَ, nor a turban that's made to fit the head. وَلَا سَرَاوِيل, nor pants that have pants legs that's made to fit the legs of the body. وَلَا ثَوْبًا مَسَّهُ وَرْسٌ وَلَا زَعْفَرَانٌ, nor any garment that has been perfumed with these types of يعني perfumes, ورس or زعفران. ولا خفين, nor can he wear خفص إلا أن لا يجد نعلين, except that he can't find any sandals. He cannot wear خفص unless he can't find any sandals. فليقطعهما, in that case he has to cut the خفص. If he can't find sandals, he can wear them, but he has to cut them, يعني حتى يكون أسفل من الكعبين, until they are lower than the ankles. Okay, so from the things that he can't wear are kufs. But if he can't find any sandals anywhere, that's not the condition today, because there will be plenty of merchants selling sandals. If he couldn't find any sandals, he can wear the kufs, but he has to cut them. And some of the scholars say that this particular hadith is abrogated by a later hadith in which it's mentioned that the Prophet ﷺ allowed the person to wear kufs and he did not tell him to cut them. This is an opinion of one of the scholars of Medina, Sheikh Muhammad Shankiti, Mukhtar Shankiti. He's a famous scholar in Medina, teaches in the Islamic University of Medina. I was going to say he's a very young man, but he was 25 years ago when I was in Medina. I guess he's not young anymore, right? No. He's a famous scholar for fiqh. And he used to have يعني دروس in fiqh in his home, يعني outside of the university, his teaching university, where anybody could attend, and he used to go into a lot of details that hardly you hear anybody mentioning in fiqh. He's a famous, well-known scholar in fiqh. His opinion, I heard him myself saying in his house that يعني the prohibition of wearing kufs unless they're cut is abrogated, and he mentioned another hadith in which the Prophet allowed a man to wear kufs, but he didn't tell him to cut them. And then he mentioned a lengthy discussion about the rules of usul, and that justify his position. I'm only mentioning that as a fa'idah, not that that is the qawl al-raji, but that is a view. That is a view. Naam.
Is he the son of...
No. He's not the son of Sheikh Muhammad Amin Shankiti. But they're from the same, yani.
Ethiopia?
No, they're not from Ethiopia. Okay. Shankiti is from Mauritania. They're from Mauritania.
Can you come up with the meaning of the word?
The meaning of the word?
Yeah,
it's okay. لا يلبس المحرم القميص. القميص is shirt that has sleeves. والإمامة the turban that's worn on the head. I skipped the word. Thank you. والبرنوس. والبرنوس is the hood. يعني the hood that's attached to a upper garment, right? And it has a hood on it, right? That's made to fit the head. The burnous. Thank you. Jazakallah khair. That means the hood. No, the imam is the turban. The burnous is a hood that's attached to an upper garment. Burnous. Wala sarawil, yani sirwal is pants. Sarawil, pants. And thawb is a garment. Massa means to touch. Wars, wazafran, those are fragrances, yani perfumes. Wars and zafran. Khuffain we know is no, we know, and that's it, really. Okay, that's it.
No.
Okay. Yeah, and it's some type of Yeah. Point number five, and we only have 5 minutes remaining, and I don't think we're going to be able to finish this. Okay, but anyway, we'll read some of them, and then next week we'll come back to this, and then we'll read the secondary source. Point number five, أَمَّا الْمَسْ الطِّيب. As far as touching your body or using some kind of sweet-smelling fragrance, فَلِلْحَدِيثِ الْمُتَقَدَّمِ. Also based on the previous hadith that mentions, يعني, no, not wearing any garment that has been perfumed. Not wearing any garment that has been perfumed. يعني not wearing a garment that has been perfumed, nor putting the perfume directly on your body, except if it remained from the person who used the scent before they enter ihram, then there's no harm. If you can use it before you enter ihram, if it remains, there's no harm. But not once you're in the state of ihram. This is based on the previous hadith, وَهَذَا يَشْمَلْ الرِّجَالُ وَالنِّسَاءُ جَمِيعًا. This includes both men and women. This one is not discussed in any detail, inshallah, in the secondary sources we'll talk about in a little more detail. Point number six, وَأَمَّا قَتْلُ السَّيْدِ الْبَرِّ وَاصْطِيَادُهُ. As far as killing the land game and hunting it, then it is based on the saying of Allah, the Most High, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَقْتُلُوا الصَّيْدَ وَأَنْتُمْ حُرُمٌ. يعني, O you who believe, do not kill the sayd, يعني the land game. وَأَنْتُمْ حُرُمٌ means while, this wow al-hal, while you are in a state of يعني إحرام. Surah Al-Ma'idah, 5th Surah, 95th Ayat. And also, وَلِقَوْلِهِ تَعَالَى. Also, another evidence for this is, حُرِّمَ عَلَيْكُمْ صَيْدُ الْبَرِّ مَا دُمْتُمْ حُرُمًا. Surah Al-Ma'idah, following Ayat 96, that it has been made prohibited upon you, yani the land game, animals that are hunted on the land, مَا دُمْتُمْ, yani مَا دُمْتُمْ, yani مَا دَامَ means what? As long as you're in the state of ihram. فَمَنْ قَتَلَ صَيْدًا بَرِّيًّا وَهُوَ مُحْرِمٌ فَعَلَيْهِ جَزَاءٌ مِثْلُ مَا قَتَلَ مِنَ الْأَنْعَامِ يَحْكُمُ بِهَذَا الْمِثْلِ حَكَمًا عَدْلًا أَوْ يُقَوِّمُ هَذَا الْمِثْلُ وَيَشْتَرِي بِقِيمَتِهِ طَعَامًا يُطْعِمُ بِهِ مَسَاكِينَ الْحَرَمِ أَوْ يَصُومُ عَنْ كُلِّ مِسْكِينَ يَوْمًا. Yani, so here it is saying what? So whoever kills the land animal while he is in the state of ihram, then it is incumbent upon him jaza'un mithlu, yani the compensation, the like of ma qatala min al-an'am, the like of what he has killed, yani he has to compensate with the like of what he has killed from the an'am, yani the domesticated animals, yani the sheep or the lamb or like this, what's equal to what he has killed in value, equal to it in value. Who is it determined by? يَحْكُمْ بِهَذَا الْمِثْلِ. Yani who, the judgment of what will be equal to it from the domesticated animals is two just judges. They will determine what you have to sacrifice, yani that's equal to the animal that you have killed. Or it may be evaluated. يُقَوِّمُ هَذَا الْمِثْلِ. Yani the likeness of it may be evaluated, and a person may يَشْتَرِي بِقِيمَتِهِ تَعَامٍ, buy food that's equal to in value to the amount of what they said is the value of the animal that has been killed, by food that's equal to it in that amount, and feeding the poor people in the haram. Yani whatever number that they may be. Or fasting for every poor person 1 day. Okay, so we can't finish this now, but in any case, this is based on the saying of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Al-Ma'idah, chapter 5, verse 95, وَمَنْ قَتَلَ منكم متعمدا, whoever kills one of these animals intentionally, فجزاء مثل ما قتل من النعم, then the compensation is the like of the animal that he has killed from the domesticated animals, and يحكم به ذوى عدل منكم, يعني the just people from amongst you should make this judgment, هديا يعني a sacrifice, بالغ الكعبة, that has to be sent to the Kaaba, أو كفارة, or an expiation, that is طعام مساكين, feeding the poor, أو عدل ذلك صياما, or that which is equal to it in fasting, ليذوق وبال أمره, so that a person may taste يعني or experience يعني the harm of what they have done. عفى الله عما سلف ومن عاد فينتقم الله منه والله عزيز ذو انتقام.